From the very first dice carved in ancient times to the modern Rubik's Cube, people have found many ways to explore this six-sided shape. But not many do it like this.
Out of that taste, I start to get it. It's a corner that has flat sides that run towards it at 90 degrees. And out of the corner, this three-dimensional shape comes. It's a cube. I can taste a cube. There is no other way to describe it than I know the taste of a cube.
Whereas composer Yanis Xenakis describes the cube like this. And mathematician Ian Stewart like this.
Take a point and move it sideways, you get a line. Now take the line and move it sideways in a new direction, you get a square. You sweep out a square with your line. Yes, if you have a square, you have a ruler in front of you and you push it away from you, and if it was covered in ink, you'd have made a square ink patch on your piece of paper. Now take that square ink patch and move it vertically, you build a cube.
In this program, you can experience not only the sound and taste of a cube, but also its smell and what it feels like to sleep inside a cube. I'll even take you to see cubes in dimensions you haven't dreamt of. As a mathematician, the appeal of the cube for me is its perfect symmetry. You can twist and turn it, and no side is favoured over any other. You can pack cubes together without wasting any space. And because they're perfectly symmetrical, cubes fit together whichever way round they roll off the production line.
I've actually come here to workshop to talk to Alan Mansbridge, who's responsible for making one of the most famous cubes in the world. I wonder whether you can describe the making of this cube. What's exactly happening with this fantastic machine we have here?
Dry and wet ingredients are prepared in a batch process next door, and the actual granules are presented to the cube making machines, and they're actually pressed together to form the cube.
So I can see the powder being swirled around, and I guess it's quite gluey, and then it sort of disappears, and out comes this wonderful line of marching cubes. Where are these cubes marching along to, sort of regimented cubes coming out?
They're actually presented to a cube wrapper, where the foil is presented around the cube, and then it's heat-sealed at the top and the sides to form a hermetically sealed cube, which keeps all the flavour in.
You can actually smell this cube. It's a fantastic smell inside here. Not many cubes have such a good smell as this cube.
The OXO cube. 40 million of these little cubes are punched out each week, giving us all a chance to taste cubes. Given the shape's perfect credentials for packing and stacking, the British steel manufacturer Corus did experiment with putting tomato soup in a cube-shaped tin. Alice Rawsthorne from the Design Museum.
Corus's researchers developed the square tin can, which has enormous benefits. And you can stack more square tin cans on a supermarket shelf. So in a market like food retailing, where space is at an absolute premium, that obviously gives any product in a square rather than a round tin can an advantage. The square tin cans are easier to transport than round ones because, again, more cans actually fit on the same pallet. Should a tin can fall on the floor, off the pallet, or off the supermarket shelf, instead of sort of rolling away and crippling a granny who's skates across the supermarket on it, it will stay more or less in its place because it falls flat on the floor. And you can even argue that ultimately it's better for the environment because it saves on petrol. Because if you have more cans in the same space on the supermarket shelf, more cans in the same space on a pallet, so more cans being transported per lorry, over the long term you use a lot less petrol. So the square tin can had all these virtues compared to the rounded can, but when it was first introduced to sell soup, consumers didn't like it. They went unerringly for the rounded version.
There is something rather unsettling about the perfect shape of the cube. Perhaps its icy perfection is just too off-putting for most consumers. But not, it seems, for everyone. Architectural writer Jonathan Glancy.
The Italian manufacturers called Brion Vega had an architect called Marco Zanuso in the 1960s to design a perfect black cube television. And it's back in production now, actually, and it's a very exciting thing. But when you walk into a room and see it, because it's this big black cube, it dominates the rooms that it's in. And that's the strange thing about it. Your eye is caught by this thing, and it does absorb light. A black cube will do that. And so it's quite a mystic-looking object.
And has it been popular?
in Italy, do you know?
It was popular amongst architects and product designers, and I think part of the reason why very few people have actually bought them is because they're extremely expensive.
Yeah, but it'd be rather nice if you changed channel by the cubes flipping, and each channel is on a different side. You know, that's sort of the satisfying thing for a mathematician about a cube, is that it's the same from all directions, so you could change channel by changing the...
It's a Rubik's Cube television.
That's right, yeah, you can all watch a different channel. Perfect.
Apple's least successful computer was the Cube computer, which had to be taken off sale fairly swiftly because demand simply wasn't as high as Apple had expected. It certainly didn't prove as popular as a very curvy, sort of ergonomic, very organically designed iMac.
No Cube computers, no Cube tellies, no Cube cans. The mathematics might tell us that it's the best shape for the manufacturing age, but consumers are less sure. OXO, though, has never felt the need to make its product ergonomically curvy.
So we've come into Alan's office here in Worksop, and I've got some of these OXO cubes in my hand. They're very satisfying. One can't really think of OXO without saying cube. What in your mind is so special about these cubes?
Well, the OXO cube shape has been around since 1910. It's a very practical shape. And when you open the OXO cube itself, it's very crumbly. It just crumbles in between your fingers like that into the drink. You can see that I'm doing now.
Yeah, it's sacrilege. You're destroying this beautiful cube in front of us. It's, but it is... can I have a go, actually?
Yeah.
It seems very satisfying to take the foil off. And here's the cubes we saw shooting along the line earlier on. So I'm going to take the cube, and we've got glass here, and crumble it in. Very satisfying. There goes the cube.
I slept in a perfect cube room very recently, which is in one of Andrea Palladio's houses in the Veneto. Palladio loved to create perfect cube rooms. And when you're in them, the experience is actually, it's quite intense, I must say. You do feel as if you are very much the centre. In other words, somehow being in that cube, you feel constantly pulled somehow by its geometry. That's quite hard to explain, but it's definitely a feeling. You feel that somehow you're attached by some sort of wire, invisible wire or string,
right,
to the building, that it's in control of you.
That doesn't sound a very nice experience.
It's an aesthetic experience, and a very beautiful one, but that's not necessarily the same as being a very comfortable or easy one.
The Renaissance architect Andrea Palladio might have liked cube-shaped rooms on the inside, but the exterior of his villas were still adorned with lots of elaborate motifs. As architects at the beginning of the 20th century tried to break away from these ornate exteriors, it was the simplicity of the cube which provided the perfect building block. Many of Le Corbusier's most famous buildings are perfect cubes. Frank Lloyd Wright attributes his architectural style to the colourful cube-shaped building blocks that his mother gave him to play with as a child. Now, architects are beginning to experiment with the cube all over again, but this time in four dimensions. And to take you into the fourth dimension, here's Ian Stewart with a little revision.
Take a point and move it sideways, you get a line. Now take the line and move it sideways in a new direction, you get a square. You sweep out a square with your line. Yes, if you have a square, you have a ruler in front of you and you push it away from you, and if it was covered in ink, you'd have made a square ink patch on your piece of paper. Now take that square ink patch and move it vertically, you build a cube. And now take the cube and move it in a direction that's completely different from all of the others, and you would get a hypercube.
The hypercube, a cube living in four-dimensional space, an object that we will never be able to build or see in our limited three-dimensional world. But there is one building which gives us a glimpse of this mystical shape. Former French President François Mitterrand commissioned an arch to be built at La Défense in Paris to line up with some of the great Parisian monuments, the Louvre, the Arc de Triomphe, the Egyptian obelisk. Broadcaster Helen Viret took me to see this architectural shadow of a hypercube.
Et voilà la grande arche. Isn't that monumental?
It's spectacular. It is really immense, the space here.
It is immense. Can you imagine that it is the width of the Champs-Élysées, here where we are, And Notre Dame and its tower could fit under this monument. I mean, just under the arch.
It is striking how, coming near to the arch, there's quite a howling wind.
Yes, there's always a big draft, west, east, or east, west, and it's always like that.
And perhaps there's something rather dangerous about producing a hypercube. It has this sort of effect of sucking you into the fourth dimension, a little black hole or something here in Paris. The four-dimensional cube, when we construct it in three dimensions, we have this smaller cube inside the bigger cube.
A bigger cube.
That's right, but the smaller cube is this open space. Do you think that Parisians actually realise the mathematical heritage of this object? I mean, I'm actually standing here now, and I can see my shadow in the sun, this two-dimensional shadow, but I'm a three-dimensional person. Do people actually realise that what they're seeing here is the shadow of a four-dimensional object?
I wish they would, but I think I doubt it a little.
Architects aren't the only ones to explore ways to see in four dimensions. The surrealist artist Salvador Dali crucified Christ on a tesseract, a four-dimensional cube unwrapped into three dimensions. In the novel The Tesseract, Alex Garland plays with the inability of any of his characters to see the whole narrative, as if the complete story is something which only lives in a higher dimensional world. But if you really want to get your head round the hypercube, then you need to talk to a mathematician. It's the language of mathematics which provides the glasses to see in four dimensions. Translating geometry into numbers is the only way to make the hypercube reveal its secrets.
In our world, we can't find that fourth dimension. But mathematically, it's easy. Instead of using x, y, z as coordinates, three coordinates, you use x, y, z, w, you have a fourth coordinate. So I can tell you in a sort of algebraic way what a hypercube looks like. And you can even count how many corners it's got, how many cubic faces it's got. You can do the whole geometry of this silly thing in terms of the algebra.
And in case you're interested, the hypercube has 16 corners, 32 edges, 24 square faces, and is built from 8 cubes. But I'm afraid I can't tell you what it tastes like.
Actually, now we're inside the cube. The wind's calmed down. There's something very calm about this space. The perfect proportions of the smaller cube sitting inside the larger cube. And I have this wonderful view through the arch, looking west where the sun is setting. You see the suburbs of Paris, and out towards the east, this wonderful Mitterrand perspective with all these beautiful shapes up lined up in this perfect line, ending with this hypercube, this four-dimensional object. A shadow of this four-dimensional object realized in our three-dimensional physical world. Just as the Renaissance artists drew a large square and a smaller square inside, and it would bring to life the three-dimensional object, the architect here has brought to life the four-dimensional hypercube by constructing these three-dimensional cubes that we're standing inside now. Maybe it's only because I'm a mathematician, but I think if I had to take one building with me onto my desert island, it probably would be this shadow of a four-dimensional cube here in La Défense in Paris.
The cube was first of five shapes presented by Marcus de Sautoy. The producer was Anna Buckley. Whit Castle was one of the greatest all-round entertainers, loved and respected both here and in America. He was a gifted musician, singer, dancer and comedian, and he also became a children's favourite after 20 years of creating world records on television's Record Breakers.
To my mind, the most staggering was not the high-speed tap dancing record of 24 strikes a second, but the courage in attempting to do a million taps in under 24 hours.
And a plumber to boot. A new two-part series looks at the Roy Castle story in Leave 'Em Laughing this morning at 11:30. Now it's 9:45, and on 198 Longwave, it's time now for the Daily Service, which is led by the Reverend Ernest Ray.